Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. James R. Scott served in the Army during the Vietnam War and was consequently exposed to the Agent Orange. He was later diagnosed with bladder cancer, which was recently recognized by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs as a potential effect of being exposed to the chemical. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Scott shares his story and reacts to the VA's update.
My name is James R. Scott, and I grew up in a small town in Keyser, West Virginia. Went into the military in 1967, and I went into the Army and had a great experience in the military. It's a beautiful way to grow up. And I served in country in the after training at Fort Monroe, Virginia, which is Continental Army Command headquarters. But I was not on site. I worked in a comm center, which is a communication center that was all underground. From there, I went to Vietnam, but during my overseas tour of duty, I was very fortunate to have, I think, now having cancer, but to have worked in Thailand and Cambodia, Vientiane, Laos, Vietnam, of course, and it was quite an experience. I traveled with a gentleman who was Thai, who worked for the United States government, and he was my interpreter, and as we traveled, he went with me, and he was also an engineer. So
how were you exposed to Agent Orange in your specific situation?
Just not knowing much about Agent Orange and going through areas that had been, obviously strafed by Agent Orange. It was quite devastating to see what that chemical would do. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. I actually used pictures in my presentation of, a delta area with running tributaries and green foliage, and then the aftermath, it's just, dry mud and nothing green. In my studies, I found that not only were the people that were in Vietnam that may have gone through an area that had been hit with Agent Orange were exposed, but also, if you think about it, the people who cleaned the airplanes, air vehicles that dumped the chemicals, they were exposed as well because, choppers were spreading it, C-130s were spreading it, and these people had to clean these planes, they had to service these vehicles, and they were exposed. Also, people that handled, from what I understand and from the reading that I've done, is that Agent Orange was housed mainly in the surrounding countries like Thailand, Cambodia, and Laos, and not stored so much in volume in Vietnam itself. It was flown in. So there are a lot of ways to get exposed, I guess is what I'm saying.
At the time, were there any warnings that you were told about or any precautions given by either the Army or anyone nearby saying, this may be dangerous, or was it just treated like any other chemical?
Because of my involvement, there were no warnings. I didn't handle the Agent Orange, and I didn't come in contact with people who actually did.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. When I went to the VA, because now I get benefits, because originally the VA said that they acknowledged the fact that this dioxin could cause cancer, and they were giving benefits for prostate cancer, but they were not giving any benefits for bladder cancer. And I talked to my urologist, and he said, well, that just doesn't make sense because, you have to, whatever goes through your system goes through your bladder to get to the prostate. And that was one of the fights that have been going on for years and trying to get the government to acknowledge the fact that if it affects the prostate, it had to affect the bladder as well.
Let's rewind a little bit and go into the story of your cancer journey. How old were you when you were diagnosed, or what year? How were you diagnosed and the treatment you underwent?
Well, I'm a little bit of an idiot. I travel in and out of the country and in and around because I manage my son, who is an entertainer. And I would see some blood in the urine. So it was a personal friend of my primary care doctor, and I'd give him a call, and he'd send me an antibiotic saying it was probably a urinary tract infection. And I'd take it, and I went to him once, and that's what he diagnosed. And it would go away, stay away for a couple months and then come back. And that went on for about almost a year. And then one day I went in and he asked for, my primary care doctor asked for a urine sample. And he came back, came running back in the room carrying the little jar. And he says, guess what, Jim? He says, you got some urine in your blood. You know, it was almost all blood.
Gosh.
And that's when immediately he sent me to a urologist. And then, you know, things began because urologists did the normal things of, you know, CTs or cystoscopes, rather, and got me in for other tests. They found that I had one tumor of the size of an orange and about two dozen more. So they did the TURBT to remove the tumors. And they told me at that point that chances of the cancer coming back into my bladder was 100%. So they said I could have the operation to remove my bladder now or later. And I figured at the age of 69, it'd probably be better for them to do it then than when I was 89. So I opted for the surgery, and I was very fortunate. I got a second opinion, of course, ended up going to the University of Michigan where they did the surgery laparoscopically. And because I've always considered myself physically fit, I exercised. Back then I was a runner. I actually took part in an exercise intervention program prior to the surgery because they were doing a study to see if people had better outcomes during and after surgery, having gotten physically fit for the surgery. And that was a neat experience. And then they did the surgery laparoscopically with the robot. And that was a great experience because they said with the robot, you have less blood loss, shorter time in recovery, and just, you know, a great team of people who worked on me. December 2020, I was a 5-year cancer survivor.
Wow. Did they diagnose you with a certain stage?
When I got diagnosed, I mean, they said, look, they said if they didn't remove the bladder and the cancer came back, it would probably penetrate and go through the walls of my bladder and metastasize somewhere, anywhere in the body. So, and then once that happens, it becomes more difficult to control the cancer. It was like an all of a sudden thing, but my urologist who did the surgery told me that it's a slow-growing cancer, very slow. Some people jump on the signs and go to doctors on a regular basis, which I didn't do.
Did you have to undergo any other treatment besides surgical removal of your bladder, such as chemo, just to make sure that everything was gone, or radiation, or was it kind of a one-and-done kind of thing?
No, I did the exercise program, I did chemo, and they said that was crazy because chemo, and, you know, prior to the surgery, and then afterwards they, you know, studied to see how physically fit I was after the surgery. Losing your bladder is quite a challenge because regardless of which diversionary system you opt with, it's not a turnkey operation. You know, you end up taking a lot of time adjusting to your new normal.
So let's pivot this conversation more towards this recent decision by the VA to accept bladder cancer as one of the conditions related to Agent Orange exposure. So what were your initial reactions when you found out that the VA decided to include bladder cancer, you know, despite being told by your urologist before that it doesn't make sense, more or less, that, you know, prostate cancer would be included, but bladder cancer would not?
I was extremely excited. Excited because there are other GIs out here who have been denied coverage or any type of benefit because they have bladder cancer and it wasn't recognized, and that's just not fair. I was very pleased to see in this, you know, National Defense Authorization Act that they are reaching out to surviving spouses and children and even parents of some of the GIs. And there's a lot of them. This was almost 60 years ago, you know, that the war has been over. So it's like, how many of these people have passed on, never receiving any type of compensation, but yet having to go through the rigors of trying to live with the after effects of bladder cancer? It's just ongoing expenses. And look how many people may have lost their homes, their families, not to mention their lives, because they couldn't handle the expense, maybe didn't have the proper insurance, maybe didn't know to go to the VA to get help. I'm very passionate about the fact that this is way overdue, but so appreciated had to happen, it happened now. It really hurts to think about all the GIs and their families who suffered. And one of the things that we used to talk about is the fact that, you know, if you went home from a war zone, you really didn't want to go home half a man or half a woman. You know, you prefer to go home in a body bag, because people that go home with any type of ailment or deformity because of war, they live with that for the rest of their lives. But not just them, their family, their friends. I mean, it changes their whole world. War is hell. And, you know, it's not right that GIs are not taken care of.
Did the VA reach out to you since this decision regarding the compensation you're owed, more or less, due to your bladder cancer?
I received a letter dated June the 21st. So, yes, they did reach out. And in the letter, they talk about how they're trying to reach out to surviving spouses, children and parents, executors or administrators of people's estates. So, yeah, they are trying to reach out. I think that's just a wonderful thing. I really do. And I just hope and pray that that they're able to contact a lot of these people so that they can take advantage of what they've been due for 60 years.
Is there a process underway with regards to assessing medical records? Is there anything on your part that you need to do? Or is it one of those things that the VA themselves will take care of and you just need to wait and see a little longer with regards to compensation?
No, they address in their letter that if you're already, like in my case, already receiving, or it says if previously determined that the veteran was exposed to Agent Orange by reason of, you know, then no additional evidence to support the fact is needed. You just have to go through your doctors and have your doctors, you know, verify what they found and so forth. But yes, someone who is not receiving any form of compensation probably would have to go through the entire process.
When you were undergoing treatment almost 5 years ago, was the VA covering your expenses for treatment? Did you have to pay for it yourself? How did that work?
They did not pay for my treatment nor my surgery. I didn't get to the VA until, I don't know exactly when, but it was probably a year or more after the surgery that I went to the VA and actually started getting some form of compensation for my disability. But had I not had good insurance, Lord only knows where I would be today. And that's the thing that hurts, because there are so many people out there, so many former military people who do not have good insurance, and they possibly did not get any treatment. They may have just died.
Are you in touch with anyone or their families who were kind of in a similar situation as you are?
Yes. I belong to a member of Beacon, Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network. So I've talked to many people. I've spoken at, they send me across the country, or have in the past before the pandemic, speaking about my journey with cancer. And I'd include presentation about the Vietnam and Agent Orange, because they spread it for 10 years, from 1961 to 1971, over 20 million gallons. It destroyed anything and everything that it came in contact with. They did it to eliminate forestry cover and crops and, you know, trying to fight a war we never should have been in the first place, in my opinion. And that's so sad. I haven't talked to anyone since I got my letter. I haven't talked to anyone, but I've talked to many people prior to getting the letter about, you know, how we were pushing to get it recognized. And through the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network, they actually sent me to Capitol Hill to speak about my journey with bladder cancer and so forth. So I've talked to many, many people about it. And like I was saying before, I've actually gone to VA affairs or centers and talked to people. And I go to the VA hospital now. The VA supply gives me all my supplies, thank God. And so it's, you know, it's been a good thing. And one of the things you mentioned before was my attitude. And I have to say this. I just did a program. I'm an African American, and I belong to the Black Men's Cancer Action Council here in the Detroit area. And last night, they asked me to do a short presentation, and I spoke on that very thing, that after my surgery, my motivation to get involved and help someone else and to show thanks was immediate. I mean, I knew that God had given me a test so that I'd have a testimony to help someone else. So, you know, I was like, let's go. You know, where do we go? What do we do? How do we help? And, you know, let's make other people aware of what's going on.
In closing, though, if there's one piece of advice you would give to people in a similar situation as you, what would you tell them?
Last night, my presentation, I left everyone with a poem from James Baldwin. A quote. And the quote was, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." That is really deep. And that's the thing with this thing called bladder cancer. My advice to anyone and everyone I talk to is learn as much as you can about it. Learn as much as you can about the insurance that you have or don't have, or that you need and can get, and challenge the doctors. Let the doctors know that it's a two-way street. They may be the doctor, but it's your body, and there's no one knows your body better than you. So it has to be a two-way street. The doctors are working off of statistics. You're working off of what you feel. And sometimes you don't feel anything at all, so you have to rely on the statistics. But you have to work very closely with them. Take someone else with you when you go to the doctor so that if the doctor were to pronounce you with cancer and your brain shuts down, that there's someone else there to take notes and gather in that information that you may have missed. And just know that, especially if it's bladder cancer, you don't have to go through this alone. Reach out to a bladder cancer advocacy network. And I'm a volunteer member, but I'm telling you, the information that they have to help people and to point people in the right direction is just absolutely incredible. And they do an awesome job. You know, going through getting a Neo bladder like I have, when they took my bladder out, they built me a new one at 23 inches of my small intestines.
Wow.
And it's just incredible what they can do. But you get to talk to people who are going through life-like experiences and trying to help each other, you know, because, and I say each other because every time I call someone, you know, they thank me for calling and helping them. But, you know, you learn something from everyone and they help me as well.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.